case, the United States v. Butler. Mr. Salter.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Keenan Salter. I've been appointed to represent Larry Butler in this matter. Mr. Butler has brought this appeal because he was the target of an unlawful search based on an invalid warrant executed by officers who failed to act with good faith. The government's position in this case represents a classic example of the exception swallowing the rule. The government is advancing that this court's holding in United States v. Kurth should save the warrant in this case, which lacked probable cause. We are seeking to have the district court's ruling on Mr. Butler's motion to suppress overturned and have this matter remanded to the district court for further proceedings. The primary issue in this appeal is whether the officers who executed the first warrant drafted by the affidavit by Sheriff Petty acted in good faith. To analyze whether the officers acted in good faith, we must use the test that this court established in United States v. Kurth. First, we must determine whether a court has clearly held that a materially similar affidavit previously failed to establish probable cause under facts which are indistinguishable from the case being presented to the court. Or we must determine whether the affidavit is so plainly deficient that any reasonably well-trained police officer would have known that the affidavit lacked probable cause and would not have submitted it in the first place. If it pleases the court, I'd like to address the second issue first, the second prong of the Kurth test, which is whether this warrant lacked a sufficient indicia of probable cause such that Sheriff Petty's belief in it was entirely unreasonable. We would submit that this affidavit is so plainly deficient that it fails to establish probable cause such that Sheriff Petty would have known that he should not have offered it. First, Sheriff Petty's affidavit fails to establish the actual time frame in which his informant observed the allegedly stolen weapon at Mr. Butler's home. Second, Sheriff Petty's affidavit...
Didn't the affidavit say that within the last 3 days...
Your Honor, I
spoke to a confidential informant? I mean, it may not be a tight enough time but for some, but it does have some temporal quality, doesn't it?
Your Honor, I would agree that the affidavit does indicate that Sheriff Petty spoke to the informant within the 3 days prior to his issuing the warrant application. However, it does not place any time on when the informant actually observed the allegations of seeing the stolen rifle within Mr. Butler's home. Based on the statements that Sheriff Petty offered in his affidavit, we can assume that this observation took place at any point in a six-week period. However, we are left with a situation where we don't know for sure when the informant observed, made his observations, such that there is no way for not only the magistrate, the district court, or this court to evaluate whether or not that information was stale. Thirdly, Your Honor, the statements that Sheriff Petty made relating to his informant's reliability were conclusory in nature. These statements included that the informant had provided information involving felony activity which have been validated and has led to the conclusion of active investigations. The problem with these statements, Your Honors, is that these statements could mean that this informant, in fact, led to the declination of prosecutions in the past. There's absolutely no legal significance to these statements in the context of informant reliability such that we can assume that this informant had actually led to a prosecution, to an indictment being brought, to a conviction of felony activity in the past. Other cases have shown examples where the informant provided perhaps less information in the probable cause context. The informant had three prior examples that had led to drug prosecutions. We simply don't have that here.
You know, what you do have is a known person in your client, apparently, this Larry Butler, that was known for other things. And I'm wondering if the sheriff was suspicious of him for lots of things, and this sort of brought a magnet, you might say. He said, oh, this is the guy, now he's got the gun. I know this is sort of an argument you're sort of making, that this was really just an excuse to go after him.
If I understand your Honor's question
correctly. Because he had the gun, which was, you know, not a big deal in and of itself. If someone else had decided, a name not known, that probably wouldn't have been much of a case. But it's, as it says in the last, second to the last, number 10 in the affidavit, the officer, along with the et cetera, task force drug task force had information in the past year that methamphetamine has been cooked at the residence of Larry Butler, and that while cooking the said drug, individuals have been assigned as lookouts, and they are armed with firearms.
Your Honor,
that's pretty electric.
It is absolutely electric, Your Honor, but I think what is significant about that point is that Sheriff Petty lacked probable cause to investigate the methamphetamine manufacturing. The only probable cause he presented in his affidavit was probable cause to believe that Mr. Butler actually possessed the stolen rifle. That's the central issue. I would agree that that is an electric allegation, but Sheriff Petty was charged with the responsibility to have probable cause to prove that allegation. He shows in his own affidavit that he didn't have probable cause. He only had probable cause in his mind to search for this stolen rifle. His reasoning, quite frankly, as to why he wanted to get into Mr. Butler's residence is something that we can't ascertain. It's not contained in the record, and we're in a position where we can't really read his mind. We would submit that under these circumstances, where we have conclusory statements in the affidavit, where there was no effort to actually corroborate this informant's information, and where this is an informant of unproven liability, as this court instructed in Kurth, when we have conclusory statements regarding an informant's track record for reliability, that Sheriff Petty's actions in this instance were not reasonable, that any reasonably well-trained law enforcement officer would have known that this warrant application should not have been submitted. Because Sheriff Petty submitted this affidavit, he failed to act with good faith. Your Honor, moving to the second prong of the good faith analysis, whether or not there has been a materially similar affidavit which has been held to lack probable cause, such that Sheriff Petty was placed on notice that he should not have offered the affidavit in this case, we would submit that Kurth itself provides such an affidavit. In Kurth, we had an affidavit that contained a similar statement about informant reliability. The informant was believed to be a reliable source. However, what we also had was statements that the informant in Kurth had actually been at the defendant's residence 2 days prior purchasing narcotics. We don't have the same staleness issue that we have in Sheriff Petty's affidavit. We also have statements that the informant in Kurth made against his own penal interest. We have no such statements by Sheriff Petty's informant in this instance. Further, we have statements that were against the informant in Kurth's penal interest. We have no such statements in this instance also. Your Honor, I notice that I'm into my rebuttal time. Unless the court has any further questions, I would reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Hartzler.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I see the stage came in from Springfield.
I'm afraid I didn't hear you.
I said I'd see the stage brought you in from Springfield. Good to see you in court again.
You still think it's that backwater? Is that your point? I have no further comment about Springfield, Illinois. It's always a pleasure to be here in Chicago. Thank you very much. I'm going to begin in the reverse order of the two prongs, and I think the government will prevail on both. But bear in mind that the burden is on the defendant. There's an indication in the rebuttal brief that the government failed to do this and failed to do that. And one of the failures that the government did was it failed to come up with a similar case. Well, the irony of that is, of course, if there were a similar case, then the defense would prevail on the first prong, because they focus on one aspect of the first prong of the test, the test that is to rebut the good faith presumption. Then they rebut the presumption of good faith by showing that, and there are three sections, courts have clearly held, the first provision, that a materially similar affidavit failed to establish probable cause, is a second, under facts that were indistinguishable from those presented in the case at hand. And they've done a nice job of focusing only on that middle provision, and so they cite Kurth as a similar affidavit, materially similar affidavit that failed to establish probable cause. But if you recall from Kurth, Kurth said, look, we've had materially similar affidavits to the affidavit in this case before. The factual distinction in Kurth, recall, was that the informant in Kurth was named. There were previous cases prior to Kurth that said you can't rely upon an unnamed informant and simply say, we believe this person to be reliable. That's not sufficient. Kurth came along, and they had a name. Savage was the name of the informant. the named informant. The affidavits were similar, materially similar. There are other cases you can find out there with materially similar affidavits, but the factual distinction was that the informant in Kurth was named. Well, in this case, it's not a named informant, but it's certainly factually distinguishable from Kurth, where the sheriff actually tried to put in information about why he believed this particular confidential informant was reliable. It wasn't the conclusory, I believe this informant is reliable. He made various statements in explaining why he believed this informant was reliable. There's another factual distinction, too, that we make in our brief, and that is that, recall in Kurth, that was a single-source affidavit. There was no information other than from the informant in Kurth. There was no information that a crime had occurred except on the basis of what the informant said. It was a drug case. The informant said, look, there are drugs in this house, and here's where they are, and here's when I was there. And it was a single-source, sole-source affidavit. Well, that's not the case here. We know the crime occurred because they had multiple sources, the two men that they had interviewed about the stolen rifle. The only thing that the informant gave him was the location of the rifle. And in terms of the staleness, I mean, it was certainly within the last 6 weeks because the gun wasn't stolen until the very beginning of the year, and the affidavit or the search warrant was executed in early February. There wasn't really too much of an issue with staleness, even if this informant had seen it sometime before. I mean, there was no likelihood that the stolen gun was going to move around in that period of time. Judge Mann, I'm not sure I fully understood your question about the other motivation that the officers might have had.
Simply that they, and this is surmise, but that the rifle was more incidental. That's a stolen rifle, and they could follow the rifle to the butler. But more telling is the fact that what was going on there. Lots of guns, lots of possible methamphetamine, bad people that are gathered together around this gun. And I don't want to say it's just sort of an excuse to get after a guy that they know they need to get after, but it sort of reflects that. And that's all I'm bringing up. I'm not saying that's what it is, but I'm just saying that number, paragraph 10, seems to be the most important part of the affidavit.
And just so I'm clear, it may have simply been an excuse, and the defense somehow suggests that that reflects bad faith on the officer's part. We all know from the Supreme Court decisions in Wren, for example, that the police officers can have another justification for going in and searching or detaining someone, and they make pretext traffic stops all the time, suspecting that there are drugs in there, but they make the stop for the purposes of a traffic violation.
So I think he's just tying it because it's the sheriff, and he's the one that signs the affidavit and basically carrying it out. I'm not saying that's a big problem. I'm just noticing it is something that is unique about this particular case. At least it seems to me it is.
All right. I just want to make sure that to the extent that that is the motivation of the sheriff and the officers to seek this search warrant, there would be nothing improper, nor should that reflect in any way bad faith or a lack of good faith on their behalf. That they may have suspicions of other criminal conduct doesn't reflect that there's no suggestion of misconduct or manufacturing of information or evidence in this case. I think that's really why this should be distinguished from so many other the bad faith cases or cases where there's a lacking of good faith. You know, the Supreme Court in Leon noted that with respect to the reasonableness of an officer believing that the affidavit he or she presents establishes probable cause, that one detail would be whether or not the affidavit had been presented to other issuing judges and rejected. We have none of that here. The evidence in this record is that this sheriff went to a circuit court, state court judge with the affidavit, believing it had probable cause, and the issuing judge believed as much. Now, we're here, of course, because Judge Scott concluded that it didn't establish probable cause, and we're conceding that point. But I think it's a little unfair to suggest that because after the fact, a district court judge and now the government concedes that there was no probable cause, that somehow Sheriff Petty duped the magistrate And bear in mind, that's really what it has to amount to, I believe. The standard, the second prong that my opponent began with first, is the defendant can rebut the presumption of good faith by showing that the affidavit was so plainly deficient that any reasonably well-trained officer would have known it failed to establish probable cause and therefore should not have applied for the warrant. Well, there are only two circumstances in which that can occur. Either, in this case, either Sheriff Petty was woefully undertrained, ill-trained, and subjectively believed that this affidavit established probable cause. But if that's the case, if he deviates from the standard of training that we apply, then you're applying a negligence standard to good faith. In this court, in a case that we cited, that Cazares Olivas case that's decided in January in this court, said, in reference to Supreme Court cases, and particularly with Leon, these decisions reflect the view that permitting people to get away with crime is too high a price to pay for errors that stem from negligence rather than disdain for constitutional requirements, citing Leon. So the first prospect of the officer acting unreasonable would simply be lack of training, negligence. The other prospect, which I think is really what's implied here, is that Sheriff Petty somehow knew that this affidavit didn't establish probable cause and somehow duped the issuing judge into believing it. And the suggestion, I guess, is that what Sheriff Petty did was omit material information. And the material information that he presumably omitted was, I know this affidavit didn't establish probable cause. There's no basis for that allegation. There's no suggestion here that there was disdain for the Constitution. In fact, if he simply wanted to override the constitutional rights of these people, there are other ways to go around and do it. By going to get the affidavit and then obtaining it as a court order from the issuing judge, it certainly reflects Sheriff Petty and the other officers who executed the search, good faith, belief that what they had was a valid warrant. If there are no further questions, I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hartzler. Mr. Salter?
Thank you, Your Honors. Very briefly, I'd just like to focus on that second prong of the Kurth analysis that Mr. Hartzler brought up in his argument. We must keep in mind that Sheriff Petty's motives are unknown, and I would agree with that point. But the real issue here is that this is an objective test. The reason why Sheriff Petty decided to issue this affidavit to the judge, Judge Legowski, the state court magistrate, is unknown to us. But what we're faced with now is evaluating that warrant, the four corners of that affidavit, and whether or not it established probable cause. The reason as to why Sheriff Petty submitted an affidavit that the district court and the government has conceded lack probable cause are unknown. What we do know is that the affidavit failed to establish probable cause, and not only did it fail, we would submit that it's not even close as to, and that's why the Kurth good faith test should be applied, should not be applied here. The affidavit wasn't close. There were several critical areas that Sheriff Petty failed to analyze, and this is based on the affidavit. He failed to ask several critical questions that any reasonably well-trained police officer would have asked in this scenario, and as such, we cannot attribute any additional work done by Sheriff Petty, any attempts to corroborate the information. All we have is the four corners of this affidavit, and it's at this point been conceded by the government and ruled by the district court that it lacked probable cause. So at this stage, we're faced with the situation of determining whether or not the test in Kurth should be applied, and that is whether the good faith exception should save this defective warrant. We would submit that it should not, Your Honor. In conclusion, because Sheriff Petty submitted an affidavit that any reasonably well-trained police officer would have known failed to establish probable cause, and because a court, particularly this court, has found previously that a materially similar affidavit failed to establish probable cause, we would ask that this court overturn Mr. Butler's conviction, remand this matter to the district court for further proceedings. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Salter. Thank you, Mr. Hartzler. Mr. Salter, to you and to your co-counsel and to your law firm, an additional thanks for accepting this appointment and ably representing Mr. Butler before this court. Case is taken under advisement.